All right, what's up, crew? Welcome back to a TWC Talks. I'm finally allowed to do the intro of our podcast. Mike graciously said, "Hey, would you like to talk during this episode?" I said, "Sure."
What a concept! Come on, dude. Everybody loves you. You know that.
We're talking about the economy and constriction, and just kind of what we're seeing. Our portfolio is seeing this. Our clients are seeing this. But I will say, Mike, this is why I'm making fun. We just had our event in Colorado, and I barely got to speak at the entire event.
By design. Yeah. Come on, Law.
It was actually so good because somebody called me because they had talked to some chamber members who were in Denver. They flew into Denver, were trekking out to the mountains. And they said, yeah, two of your members called me because I used to be in Denver. And I said, what are you doing in Denver? They said, we're in the best mastermind coaching crew that we've been in since the first couple of months of Inner Circle, which Inner Circle was the first, modern day mastermind. I was like, that is high praise. And she was like, yeah, good job. I said, no, good job to the team, Gabrielle, Lauren, Mike. Cause sometimes it is, I'm just there and I'm a part of it, just like the rest of the crew.
So I think
you guys did an amazing job.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, hey, as the leader goes, so do the team, right? So you've been doing a phenomenal job of architecting the team, the vision, and we're all here, pushing uphill with you. So it's been really cool. And I love it too, man. I love seeing, what I really love seeing at those events is how we pick up different pockets of the room based on who's speaking. Did you see that? How all of a sudden a different part of the room would light up when it was Lauren or Gabe's versus me or you. It's like, wow, you can really tell the dynamics. Those personality connections really start to light up when they start to sync with a different type of energy in the room. And I think that just goes to prove the power, is proof positive of what we're building, because we're able to help a broader range of people than maybe you or I would normally be able to touch,
Yeah, 100%. Let's talk about, we're seeing this on calls. You have made it through, you have more experience from a 10-year standpoint. You were doing business in 2008, correct?
Yeah, I had my best year ever in 2007, and then 2008 happened.
Best year, worst year, back to back.
Yep, it was brutal.
So right now, the Fed is, so here's a basic, just a really fast, quick and dirty overview of how this stuff works. The Fed's real job is to prevent and runaway inflation. It's hilarious because when you listen to them in 2021, they're like, oh, it's transitory. It's not a big deal. We're not going to raise rates for at least 3 years. Then they just basically blitzed the market in 2022. It was the most aggressive rate hike, I think, ever, maybe since the 80s. And so people were like, yo, what's going on? So when you see the failure of certain banks, what's happening is they kind of took Powell's word for what it was worth, and they bought a bunch of bonds. And then when rates go up, anything that you buy on the bond market pre-rate hikes become drastically devalued. So we have all these banks right now who are, I don't want to say underwater, but they're pretty close. And if the Fed would have kept going, it would have just kicked out, another 20 banks probably. And they ended up halting. And now we're in this interesting, weird / slightly uncomfortable state where the Fed has basically said they're going to lower rates this year, but they're terrified of inflation coming back. Inflation is really when things get more expensive because the money supply increases, but the GDP or the production of the economy does not increase to match the money supply. And so there's all these things. We're not going to do an economic deep dive on this today, but I do think it's important to talk about pricing, to talk about splitting up of different products and program tiers that you have, because there is a way to combat this. It's proven, and we're doing that right now in-house, and it's working really well. A lot of people are feeling a crunch. And I told our clients yesterday, I said, look, you're going to have longer conversion cycles for the next year. That's just the way that it is. you're not likely going to be able to just hustle barrel past a constriction. And that's what this is you have two types of people right now. You have the type of person who has legit no money because they can't get it, because money, access to money is being throttled. And then you have the type of person who has money, but they're hoarding a bit of that money because they're a little bit trepidatious around what the economy is going to do. What happens when this takes place is people slow down decision making, right? Because they're not quite as keen to just be like, cool, here's 50 grand or here's 100 grand or here's 20 grand or whatever. And so if you're running a consulting, coaching, expert type business, you have to be aware of this, because there are ways to compensate if you're aware of it. That's like a big macro fast explanation of where we're at. Anything to add to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's important for people to understand that the money is still there. You know, when times slow down and everything, currency, right? Currency, it flows. And that flow of currency is slowing down, but it's still there, but it may shift on you. So where it once was, you might need to adapt and put your straw into the river somewhere else. And so this is where being a little smaller and more agile is absolutely to your advantage. And to your point, Taylor, saying earlier, like I've kind of seen a couple cycles now, it doesn't hit me in the gut as much in terms of a fear response. Now it's like, oh, it's one of those times. Got it. And instantly I start going into a more creative, adaptive mode. And I know that's kind of where you're leaning to, building out product suites and things. You start to realize like, okay, I can't just stalwart stand and wait and battle it through and just be, you know, rigid. You actually have to flex with this new currency. And I think that's what we're doing brilliantly here over at TWC.
Yeah, definitely. So if you're listening to this and things feel a bit harder right now than they did 3 years ago, that's everyone. Like, so welcome to the world. You know, everyone's feeling it to different degrees. And I think how you prepared for it is changing kind of the intensity of how you're feeling it right now. And so 3 years ago, you could just basically blaze through. If you have a cash deficit, if revenues are down, you just do more stuff and it eventually kind of fix itself. Right now, we're not really in a climate where you can solve structural issues with more revenue. That's a big change. Because if you solve it 1 month, you're still going to have constriction the next month. And so I want to briefly talk about pricing, and then we can get into some tactical nitty gritty things that would be able to help people. And Mike, if you want to, you can ask me anything too. Like you're an investor, you're watching the markets at all times. So let's just have a convo about what we're seeing. Sound good?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I know where you're going with this pricing concept. So I'm excited. Everybody tune in here. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a great book on, if you pick up a book by Thomas Sowell, it's called Basic Economics. It's a 700-page book. And so I'm a, people like don't know this, I'm just a nerd. I love, I just love
nerd. Hashtag nerd. New t-shirt, pucker out.
Nerds unite. And part of this is because of my background in real estate. Part of it's just because I'm curious. And I've always been curious. And I picked this book up some time ago and read it. And I reread it a couple of weeks ago, just to look at everything and the trends. And pricing is one of the main drivers of commerce. And Thomas says that pricing serves three main functions. And this is, by the way, if you want to know how to run a great education business, you can borrow and model and copy things that are coming from the grocery business, from tech and software, from like, they're all the same. Business is just the production and the delivery of a solution in exchange for a monetary price that people feel like that solution is worth. When you have $1 million in a bank account, then you're going to be more likely to say the solution is worth more money than when you have $1,000 in a bank account, because the cost becomes more painful. So these are the three things that Thomas says pricing does. Number one, there's an information function. So pricing carries data and information about the scarcity of goods and resources. So when something is in abundance, there's a lot of it, then the pricing goes down for that thing. A high price signals that there is a lack or a scarce supply of something. Stay with me for a second, because this doesn't directly apply, but we're going to bring it full circle here in just a second. So that's the first thing. When you price something, you're telegraphing the relative scarcity or lack or abundance of that good or service. The second thing that pricing does is it's got an incentive function. So it incentivizes the behaviors in that market. And this is where when you get into, if you've read Zero to One or like VC type books, you'll see this where when an industry or a business has really high profits, it puts a flashlight on that, and other business owners say, oh, I'm going to go into that market because there's obviously the availability to make a lot of money. As more people come into the market, the supply increases. And because we know pricing has a information function, as the supply increases, there are more options. What happens to the price?
Goes down.
It goes down. And so part of pricing is a telegraph, but part of pricing is a byproduct. It's a signal on the back end of incentives. So the reason that incentives are important is because the market's always self-regulating, and the market's always trying to get the most for the cheapest. That's why Walmart was able to come in and displace everyone. And that's why Amazon.com was unable to come in and displace everyone. They're fighting to self-regulate, and the customer will always choose, how do I get the most upside for the least amount of price? And this incentive actually drives companies to compete with each other to lower the barrier of entry, especially when things get tight. The third thing price does is it actually has a rationing function. So information, incentive, and ration. Rationing means that the price of something actually controls the rations of a good or a service. So if you are paying attention and if you're sharp, what you'll notice is this is not a linear bullet 1, 2, 3. This is a circle. It's a cycle. Price communicates information. The incentives from that change the scarcity or abundance of the supply. And then price then acts as a ration, which circles back up to the information. Does that make sense?
Love it.
So if you want something to grow, in most cases, what we're going to do is we're going to make something cheaper. However, we want to be able to make something cheaper so that it grows while still rationing the finite supply of time. As an expert, you are really transferring information and education, but you're using your time to do that. So you don't have 1,000 hours a day, you have 24. And so we're rationing the supply through the pricing. This puts us in an impossible situation if you only have one product.
Right.
Because you have to simultaneously bring down the barrier of entry while rationing your time. It doesn't work. And so when things constrict, what the first thing that we typically do is we go in and we split apart different offerings into multiple offerings. And we'll create products on the front that people can access cheaply so that there's growth. And then we'll create a tier on the back end. So if anyone studied internet marketing, like the value ladder, if you're watching this live and you've ever heard of the value ladder, then let me know. But like the value ladder is like a Russell Brunson type concept. Whether he knows this or not, the value ladder is actually coming from the three functions of pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it's allowing you to do is it's allowing you to have more customers while still protecting the back end and rationing the value of your time.
Yeah,
and so this is the easiest way for us to combat something like an economy restricting or constricting or crashing is you have more things. So this is the book we just talked about earlier before the show, The Revolving Price Method. We just launched this. You may have picked it up. It's a phenomenal piece of intellectual property, but it's $3. which is dumb.
It's like, wait, what?
Yeah. So there have been actually, I've got a couple messages of buddies of mine who are like, dude, why are you doing $3 books? I'm like, well, look, here's why. Because we have to be able to make information accessible while honoring the prices that are being really incentivized in the market. So when an economy shuts down, the incentives drive the price down. But my time on the back end, I've still got clients pay me $150,000 a year. You know, chamber is expensive. It's the best in the world, so it should be expensive. We don't want to telegraph that it's not good or that it's infinite in supply. Right. And so we can't lower the price on that, nor would we want to. When you go out to like Colorado, you see like, I think we paid $105,000 to put on that event. And it's for 50 people. It's not like some massive event. It's like, it's an incredible display of value. But we do still have to play with the market on this. And we have to be able to release great quality information on the front in a way that the market is appropriately incentivized to participate in.
100%.
I'll pause to make sure this is making sense.
Yeah, this is dense material, my friends. Worthy of a replay, absolutely. And we'll get you the link to the revolving price book, and the replays and all that. We'll make sure that's there. go.wealthyconsultant.com/revolve. One of the things I'm a big proponent of, I've been telling clients this for years and years and years, is this propensity to let's do a discount, you know, whether it be seasonal because it's the holidays, or whether it be economic because it's recessionary. It's like, well, times are tough, so let's do a discount. And like, no. We're not going to discount. We're going to add value. And otherwise, to your point, you're telegraphing like, oh, well, it actually isn't worth the X number of dollars that we were originally charging, you know? So you really want to be cognizant of like, what is it that you are telegraphing? What are you saying to the market when you start playing with pricing? And to the point of breaking it out and making it more accessible, lowering the barrier to entry, creating a front end product suite or like a net is a powerful way for people to get that value and be able to access it when maybe they wouldn't otherwise. It's either they can't get anything or at least give them something. And it's better if you have those offerings up front that allow people to get those tastes and nurture them. And here's the cool thing. I'll end on this. It's what's best for everybody. You know, yeah, it's good for us long-term and we're establishing relationships and relationships are the business of business. But ultimately our narrative and mission in the company is to help people grow. And this is the best way we can do that. Hey, times are tough. Let's give them something that's actually going to give them help, you know, straight up.
100%. I think one of the risks here is that you don't want to make fear-based decisions in a struggling economy or a period where your business is struggling. We have all, when you go through our financial playbooks, and this morning we just added another 9 hours to the financial playbook. And this is a chamber playbook. It's MBA level. It's like really high quality material. But when you go through that, one of the things you notice is that when we run businesses, there's all these frameworks that we run our business, not just based on the economy, but based on frameworks, which allows us to make decisions from a really data-driven place rather than a fear-driven place. An example of this, we talked with some clients yesterday, and you know, they're overstaffed. They weren't overstaffed a year ago.
Yeah.
But they're overstaffed now. And when we are counseling them, you know, we're looking at the frameworks that are running their business. And so it's very easy to make a fear-based decision. And what they're really were wanting to do is just like ram through a bunch of revenue and try to, you know, fill up the cash reserves. But when you do that and you do it again and again and again and again, eventually what you do is you get comfortable with operating a business that's not in line with the right way to run a business. And so the counsel there was like, let's honor the frameworks that are designed to protect you. And when you know what those frameworks are, you can make very fast, correct decisions.
Yep.
And I think this is the risk right now is a lot of people are feeling it. Decision-making is slower. Conversion cycles are slower. That does not mean that you should change your entire business tomorrow. It doesn't necessarily mean you need to change all of your offers. This is the power of having a crew in your corner who has been through this before, who knows how to combat it, and who can help you make more data-driven decisions. And you might have a lot to say about that as an investor, you know?
Yeah. So one of the things I see all the time in investing and in business, when things get tough, what do people do? Their attention is drawn in. They zoom in on the pain point because they're now feeling it. Where it was once just covered up by revenue, and it just kind of was something that it did exist, but they didn't feel it to the pain point that we talked about earlier. But now they do, because the pain point is more acute. And so what happens when something's more acute? Your attention goes towards it. Well, when their attention goes towards it, what happens? They are now experiencing and seeing in real time the ups and down fluctuations of, say, the charts or the markets or their business. And so it's like your heart attacks go up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, right? And they are freaking out because they're so focused. So one of the elements you also need to do as an investor and business owner is actually zoom out and look more at the macro trends, the trajectory. Yeah, we went down a little bit, but where are we trending? Are we actually just working our way back out? Or are we in a complete overhaul, like, you know, necessity shift here? And a lot of people make short-term decisions that ruin them in the long term because they're zoomed in too much. They need to zoom out and actually see the macro trends that they're in. And I think that's what happens when you've lived through multiple economic cycles. You start to become more aware. I think everybody goes, oh, yeah, that makes sense, Mike. Like, no duh. But there's a difference between knowing and living it. And once you've actually lived it, you go, oh, yeah, this is one of those 10-year deals. Okay, cool. Well, I know where we're going to be. And that confidence is like what gets you through it. And it makes you more of a bulletproof entrepreneur, solid decision making. And honestly, when there's blood in the streets, I start getting greedy. I'm like, okay, competition is struggling right now. Like, it's time to make moves. And in 2008, one of the things, one of the lessons I learned, and I literally put it on my vision board, it's over here. It says, who has the capital to invest in this downturn? Those who invested in the last one. And that's what we do. We invest into our clients, into our customer base, into the assets, into the portfolio. We get aggressive now because everybody's going into hibernation mode. And as soon as we come back out, guess who's on top? And guess who's there to provide them even more value to the marketplace? So I think it's just a reframe of understanding, actually looking at these opportunities and not times to withdraw.
Yeah. Another style of investing is investing into your community, into your network, into your access to information. You know, we have chamber clients who are reporting record revenue months right now, but it's not because of what they're doing right now. It's because of kind of what we built 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
Nailed it.
And getting into that like preventative preparation mindset. You don't want to come into like, you don't want to come into chamber just to fix a flailing, dying business. However, the best time to, you know, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. So I would just counsel everyone, like, you know, this, we're not going to pull out of this in five days. Like, if you had a rough February, March is not going to be a lifeline. Just because you end the month, does nothing changes. We're really not going to see it until probably 4 to 6 months after the rates are cut and access is restored. And so there's confusion even right now. I know that the Fed has said that they're going to cut rates this year, but they're waiting until the last possible moment. So we're looking at neutral inflation. We're looking at growth, so economic growth. We're looking at unemployment. Those things are signaling to them, okay, that the economy is still a little too hot. So they're almost incentivized in a weird way to cool off or crash the economy. A soft landing is a cool off without actually ruining everything. So they're looking for a soft landing, which means we still have to come down. And for us to come down means businesses struggle. So you have to prepare. You have to run your business right now, not like it's 2020. Anything you're doing, if you're just doing what you did in 2020, like we're waiting for you to go out of business so that the rates can cut. And that is a mean, that's kind of like capitalistic thing to say, but it's true. Like, when the tide goes out, where everyone's looking for people who are naked, Like, that's you if you're still trying to grind through like it's 2020 or 2019. And so you have to switch around the way you run your business, the way you look at marketing and sales. We're like dumping content into the market. Part of the reason we're putting so much content out is to honor these three functions inside of price. People, free content is a price. You still have to invest your time, but the price is actually us. We're assuming the price of production. So we're essentially securing access to material and IP that can enable growth and kickstart growth without derationing the supply on the back end. It's a very complicated kind of, it's a complicated subject. But I do think that the biggest risk that I would say I see right now is people are just like, well, it'll get better.
Yeah, let's try harder, right? Yes. Like do more. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to take a little bit here, but with the right frameworks, with the right basics, if you have the right basics that are really set, and people aren't realizing this either, like the things that worked 20 years ago are working better than the things that worked 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But everyone forgot, right? So we're resetting. But the coolest thing is we've already reset. We reset in the summer of 2022. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're growing. But we're not growing because of stuff we did now. We're growing because of stuff we did way before. So it seems scary, but you've got to get into an environment that can re-rig your thinking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost cliche to say, but it still really holds true. It's a good frame to run on is, you know, when it's winter, think summer. When it's summer, think winter. Like we need to start, again, zooming out and looking at those. As business owners, we need to start looking forward because whatever efforts we put in today are going to be realized 60, 90, 120 days out or longer to the point of this podcast. So yeah, if you haven't already been doing it, today's the day to start doing it. You know, one of the fastest things you can do is make yourself structurally strong. And that is through elimination. You know, get rid of all the small little things. That whole death by a thousand cuts thing is a real thing. I saw this a lot years and years ago in the restaurant industry, and it would just be the condiments and like the little things that get missed, you know, but you have to understand that every little thing builds up over time. And it's when times are really tough and you don't have necessarily a whole suite of options to choose from, figuring out where to reduce your burn, make yourself more, sustainable. Is only going to help you long term too. So anything that you can do like that, as simple and kind of basic as that may be, the reality is it will make you a better business in the long haul, and it will only help you once things really start to turn around too. So it's a small hack, but it matters. And if you have the time to do it now, now's the time to do it.
Love it. Cool. We'll put the link for Revolving Price in the show notes. I would pick it up. It's super cheap. It's a pretty quick read. You can probably read it in a couple of hours. And start implementing it. Reach out if you need anything. And also leave us a review on the show if you're getting value from it.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us.
See ya.